This podcast is part of the Headstuff Podcast Network.
Hello. You're very welcome to the Alison Spittle Show with me, Alison Spittle. I may sound different, and that's because I'm in London. I've moved to London. I moved to Camden. There's an Amy Winehouse statue here. And they have all those Portuguese tarts out in the back of a van in a market near me. And I won't lie, I'm delighted I moved. Just for the custard tarts. And have you ever been to Pret a Manger? I don't know how to, it's a very, very good shop for food. Hey, let's get on to the podcast. Amy Stevenson and Shane Langan are two fantastic writers. They're involved with The Diet of Worms, which are a fantastic sketch group. I fully recommend you go onto YouTube and Google Diet of Worms, Taste of Home, Denny Sausages. One of the funniest things to come out of Ireland ever. I love it. Also, they had a show called The Walshes, which is really good too. And that was on RTE and BBC a while ago. And they write together. And I wanted to interview them because specifically now they're writing a TV show called Becca's Bunch with Nick Jr. And I've always had a big fascination with kids' TV shows. I suppose because it's always been in my life. For a long time, because, you know, I was a kid, I watched kids' TV, but I have four younger sisters, and they range from being 6 years younger than me, to being 10 years younger than me, to being 13 years younger than me, to being 19 years younger than me. So I feel like I have caught a glimpse of a lot of ages of children's television. Like, I would have liked Play School, which was brilliant. I didn't really get into Bosco because I wasn't brought up in Ireland for the first part of my childhood. I was brought up in England, so I'm afraid it was all CITV and CBBC. Although I get that Bosco is a big cultural phenomenon, and I like the cut of Bosco's jib, but I wouldn't have been into Bosco when the time was right. Then my sister was into Barney, and I liked Barney a bit. I used to pretend I didn't, but I did. And then the Teletubbies, which was just crazy. And then Teletubbies for a long time, that even went into my third sister's kind of watching of television. But then there was stuff like the Tweenies and Percy the Park Keeper. And now going into like Peppa Pig. So yeah, I've watched a lot of children's kids TV. Also, I've been unemployed for a vast amount of my life as well. That would contribute to watching a lot of kids' TV. So yeah, listen to the interview and I'll get back to you and chat to you soon. Okay, bye.
Shane and Amy, thank you so much. Wait, I burped there.
Will we all burp?
We'll burp. Thank you so much for coming to the show. Really, really appreciate it.
Thanks for having
us. Thank you. Yeah.
I'm really excited to talk to people that have, like, you're involved with Becca's Bunch, which is a new TV show on Nickelodeon Kids or Nickelodeon?
Nick Jr.
Yes. And how does one go about writing a kids show?
Well, we did, so it's a show that was that we were writing on. We were writing on little episodes. On a kids show, generally, there's going to be up to about 52 episodes.
Yeah, 52 by 11 minutes. So it's actually the thing I think is really nice is, like, say for if you're writing, like, say for with your sitcom, like,
yeah,
you don't ever have enough money to hire other writers and have a writer's room. Whereas with kids' TV, because there's 52 episodes and because there probably is quite a bit of money in kids' TV, there's often writer's rooms. So it's that thing of, yeah, we never got to do a writer's room really until...
You'd always sort of look to like you'll read or look at, you know, American TV shows and stuff like that, and how they have writer's rooms, and that's sort of what you would dream about being when you want growing up,
eating sweets all day and like riffing off other people.
So this is the closest thing that you can get to, I think, in the country, really. So anyway, we were writing on that. So we were writing just the odd episode here and there under a head writer system.
Okay.
And then the head writer, so this is a show, was created by Jam Media, by Connor Finnegan and Chris Dicker. And so they're already going on the writing thing. It was like halfway done. And then the head writer left. And then they asked us to take over.
Nice. Yeah. It was really scary. I remember we were over in London and I'm really superstitious, but then I'm also really like skeptical about superstition. So I don't really know what that means. But I'd like,
no,
we were walking. I feel like I am superstitious about things. So I'd be like, no, don't touch that because you'll, I don't know. But I was walking down to meet Shane somewhere and I found a penny on the ground and I was like, oh, better pick that up for luck. And then about 30 seconds later, we got the phone call from Jam saying, hey, will you guys be head writers? And I was so, I actually swore and I was like, am I allowed to?
Yeah, you are.
I was like, shut the fuck up. And it was like a conference call.
Oh,
like,
no.
I know. I was like, oh, damn. But yeah, so that was great. Yeah, so we ended up taking over the head writing of the show. So I think we oversaw about half of the episodes and then about 13 of them were ours that we commissioned and got other writers to write and stuff. So it was amazing. And we also kind of were very new to it. Like we hadn't written on that many kids' shows at all. We'd done obviously a bit of comedy and stuff before, but not kids' TV. So it was...
We were very fortunate.
Yeah. Very fortunate. Very fortunate.
What's like an important... arc in kids shows, I presume that like you have like 52 episodes, I presume like some of them are going to be similar in story or theme, or what's the, how do you go about that?
I think, well, I mean, I don't know. Yeah, I mean, they could, I've presumed wrong.
No.
We've never thought about this before.
Well, do you know what? I think there's generally like a structure. So when we first started writing the episodes, it was like you almost answered questions. So it was like, Becca gets a call to go on an adventure. There's they do this, but there's a stumbling block. They do this, but there's a stumbling block, and then they all figure it out, and that's the end. So there's definitely, I feel like there's more structure than any comedy we've based on.
That's just a practical thing, really, because there's so many episodes and because there's so many disparate writers. You know what I mean? You can't just have like, you know, 12 or 15 or 20 odd writers just going and doing their own thing, because then it would just, when it all came together, it would just be a bit of a too much of a mishmash, and the show wouldn't have any identity. So kind of there had to be some sort of, and generally in the other shows we worked on, there's definitely sort of like a house structure to an episode.
Yeah.
And that can change, but it's just good to have that in there.
I think as well with preschool, there is themes like, and because we're so new to it, we got to work with this amazing woman in Jam called Lena Byrne, and she's the head of scripting in Jam, and she sort of totally kind of helped, like held our hands a little bit going through the process of it. But she has these like great sort of archives of things like themes on preschool, and she'll have literally like 100 different ideas. So it'll be like, let's do one about nature, let's do one about losing your tooth, so you kind of look at this and you kind of go, okay, maybe we won't do that, but what about something like this? So it's really good. She had so many sort of references for us to base ideas and stories and stuff on. So she was super integral to us actually doing it. So
was there any story that you felt passionate about that you wanted to get forward to these preschool kids? Was there anything that resonated with you as a preschool kid?
That's a good question. What do you think?
I don't know. I'm trying to think of what I like, things I loved. I don't know if there was anything that I kind of felt like I learned, like, not that I didn't learn from kids TV when I was younger, but there's nothing that I think of that I just remember. Stupid little things. Like my favourite show growing up was The Muppet Babies. Like I loved it so much. I still actually have a Muppet Babies blanket my sister made for me. So I love it. But I think it was always, I don't know, it was probably the funniness in it that I really liked. And, you know, like obviously your sense of humour develops the older you get. But I think it was the things that always resonated with me as a kid was the humour and like gags and physical comedy.
All the stuff I liked growing up, I don't know about you and you, but I like, it was just like the stuff that just didn't talk down to you as a kid. It's just like, it should just be funny in the same way. There just shouldn't be any you know, boobs or cursing or anything like that. And, you know, really, essentially, it should just be like a really funny story, and that should be the same standard, regardless of whether it's
through a real like environmental phase when I was about 8 or 9, and I loved Captain Planet, and that was not funny at all, but that was great. That was
global warming is not funny.
Yeah, no. It's not.
But now that we've sorted that out, we don't need.
Thankfully, global warming is in the past.
Good old Captain Planet saved the day. Did you have to kind of hang around kids of preschool age, or were you doing some research for Becca's Bunch?
We've loads of nieces and nephews, so
nice. They're good farm.
Yeah, and at the time we were living over in London, and we were sort of minding.
My niece, Evie,
and so she was
like full time. So that was our job before we took on the job. We were like tag teaming.
I think I was working
doing research.
Unbeknownst to ourselves, we were doing research.
I think. You would kind of, the odd time, and I'd sometimes phone up my sister because she's got lots of kids as well, and I'd go like, oh, put Lila on the phone. And I go, Lila, do you know what this means? Or like, what do you think happens when you lose your tooth? Or what do you think happens when you go asleep? And it's really interesting hearing the way kids' kind of brains work and stuff. Like, I know, so we're like, there's a show we're writing on at the moment for Amazon, and they have a full-time child psychologist on the show, and she's over all of the notes.
Whoa.
Yeah, and they also do things like they'll have, before even any episodes are made, there's an animatic, which is them putting together, I'm also bad at describing it, it's essentially they storyboard an episode and then they put together the storyboards as a visual reference for the animators. So they'll show that to kids who are like 3 and 4 and 5, and they record their reactions to it, so they know exactly what they like and what they don't like.
And
I think they like to do it by like judging their facial expression, because obviously the kids aren't going to be, you know, necessarily that sort.
They're going to put the thumbs up.
Yeah, exactly. There's a lot of that.
It's like they'll kind of go, oh, well, their eyes widened at 1:22, which means that was a good joke, and that I'm finding really interesting. And that actually, a lot of the time, it's this really simple. Like sometimes we might try and put in a few kind of wordplay gags or whatever, but a lot of the time it's like someone falling over, which is really funny anyway. But like, they love that physical comedy, I think.
Yeah, and then you get into the discussion then about sort of like, well, kids won't get this, or something in the script that kids won't get, or they won't know what that means. And then the discussion of, well, should you put that in, or should this be the opportunity for them to learn what that is?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think we kind of sometimes fight back a bit on that. Where someone will go, oh, a kid doesn't know what that is. And it's like, well, they're watching TV, and so why can't we teach them what that is? And, you know, like...
Do we, though, or do we just grumble like that to ourselves and then not do anything about it?
Maybe. Probably.
Teaching them, man. How do I reach these kids?
They got to learn about, I don't know.
But is there anything that you felt passionate that they did need to learn about, or is there any kind of stories that you felt...
I don't know. God, I don't know.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of, there's one, and this is a really small thing, but there's one, we didn't even write it, but it was maybe the first one that was commissioned after we were head writers, and it's about friends falling out. And like, I know I guess that happens all the time, and it's just about, it's really sweet, and there's actually a really nice Say Anything, you know that movie from the 80s, Say Anything? Yeah, there's a nice little reference to that in it, which I don't know if anyone's gotten because kids weren't born in the 80s, but I think things like that, like listening to people and listening to your friends and stuff. I know it's not that big a sort of theme, but
empathy and stuff like that, and just sort of having, I think, just
not being a dick,
not being a dick, being a good mate and stuff like that. I mean, a lot, you know, particularly Becca's Bunch, that's like, it's about a group of friends and stuff like that, and they're all sort of,
they all have their things that they're good at and probably things that they're not good at. So it's sort of trying to focus on, like, one of them, for example, is he can be quite nervous about things, so it's like trying to make sure that the others are empathetic towards that, and they're not kind of bullying him, or not that they ever are, but they're not making him do things that he's really uncomfortable with, which I think is really important. I probably didn't really think about it that much at the time, but it's really important to say to kids, like, I don't know.
Yeah, and there's another show that we're helping develop a little bit, and it's all about leadership. You know what I mean? And I think that's, you know, with sort of like, you know, really bad
preschools.
Yeah.
Whoa.
So like with really bad examples of leadership going up around the world, especially male leadership and stuff like that. That was the idea behind the guys trying to work on that show. So that, like, stuff like that's really important, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's a really important theme. So that was kind of cool to work on.
A thing I found interesting as well is in the world of like preschool, a lot of the shows that are coming out at the moment or have come out in the last couple of years are female driven. So it's generally like the leader is the girl, or which I think is great. But what we've kind of been discovering through helping develop this new show is that, like, it's great to have women front and centre or girls front and centre, but you also need to make sure you're teaching boys empathy and you're teaching them that, yeah, if they're going to be a leader, they have to be, like, exactly what Shane was saying, that, like, they need to have the qualities of a good leader and be compassionate and be good listeners. So it's not just like, you know, boys are tough and girls are emotional. It's like, let's mash all that together and make slightly better rounded humans, maybe, or certainly try to, I think. Yeah, because I find that interesting, all the like the gender in kids' TV and how it's,
it's a lot of responsibility.
Yeah,
I'm just trying not to think about it too much.
Yeah, I think that's why
when you ask all these questions, we'd never thought about
I know. I feel like I'm just like talking now because I'm like, oh yeah, shit, that's what. That's what.
Hopefully,
that's
we're thinking about it on some level. If not,
Cherry Jam.
And what are all the for people that haven't seen Becca's Bunch? What are all the characters in Becca's Bunch like? What's their different aspects and who? What kind of kids are you appealing to? What's the
I don't know. I mean, I guess I hope that there's something there for every type of kid to sort of, you know, for a few, there's like different characters there for every type of kid to sort of, what's the word? Relate to.
Yes.
What's the thing we want people to do to the
I'm
show?
Not going
to
be articulate on my spare time.
No, you're dead right. You're off the clock. You are off the clock.
Becca is she's the main character, and she's kind of the leader of the gang, ostensibly. And so she's just all about adventure and being really positive and sort of optimistic about everything.
Nothing's impossible.
That sort of thing. So she's great, but not everyone's like that, and that's okay. So there's also Pedro, who's a worm.
A worm.
Becca's a bird, by the way.
No. They're friends, though. They're friends.
She's never been tempted.
I never thought about that.
I was thinking about it, actually. She's never been tempted.
There you go. Yeah. So she's got maybe restraint as well. That's another good quality for her.
Yeah. Self-control.
Yeah.
To not eat her friends.
Pedro is very much sort of, I guess, not quite the antithesis, but he's sort of much more cautious and much more nervous about things and sort of.
But like, it's actually quite nice because it's like this. He does love adventures, loves going on them, loves the end result of the adventure. It's just the getting there can sometimes be tough for him because he gets a bit nervous and anxious about stuff, which I think is quite relatable. I feel like I relate to that quite a lot. That sort of, and, you know, I want to do this thing, but I'm really scared.
It's easy for someone who doesn't have any fears or anxieties to go and do new things or new adventures and stuff like that. So I mean, that's sort of easy enough for them to, but for a character or a person who's got all these anxieties or who is, you know, nervous or, you know, not, that's quite, and to still do it is quite heroic. So I actually think he's probably the most heroic character in the in the show. That's Pedro. Who else is there?
There's Sylvia, she's kind of like almost like the younger sister of the group. So she's quite a sweet character. I think she was probably the hardest. So there's four kind of main characters, and I think she was probably the hardest to nail because it can be, I don't know, you know, you kind of had like your kind of worried one, the leader of the bunch, the funny one who we'll get onto, and then her. But she sort of really looks up to Becca and really wants to sort of like be like her. And I think she's turned into a really sweet little character. Yeah.
And she's voiced by an Irish actor as well.
Yeah, which is amazing.
So like even around the world, I mean, in the English-speaking world anyway.
Yeah, in Nick US, it's by a really great voice actor, Susie Power, I think is her name.
That's right.
And she's great. And I actually, I really loved that. I was like, I'm so glad there's an Irish voice on it.
That's cool.
Yeah.
And she's not a bird. What type of character?
She's a fox.
Yeah. She's a little sister
of
a bird.
Yeah. Well, she's not quite the little character.
Exactly. She looks up to this bird.
Yeah. She really looks up to this bird. Yeah.
And she's got a bag that is
a very handy
TARDIS-like bag where she can pull.
You need one of those.
You do.
Like, how are we going to tie helpful. Up these criminals?
Originally, I would have been like, maybe we don't need one then, but then actually it's so helpful writing scripts. And we need like a pogo stick. Well, there you go. Okay.
Like the Barney bag. Do you remember?
Yes.
It used to come out every few episodes. Yeah. And it'd be like, what's in the Barney bag?
Story idea for today?
Yeah. Amazing.
Yeah. MacGuffin, yeah.
And then you got the funny one.
Yeah. Yeah, he's well,
Russell.
He's, yeah.
Yeah, he's a squirrel. He's kind of just very sweet and sort of doesn't really, he sort of leaps before he thinks.
Okay.
He's probably funny without knowing that, you know, he's not like Michelangelo. Was it Michelangelo in the Turtles?
No, Raphael
was kind of like
the, he was the wisecracking one.
Oh, sorry, yeah. He was like a bit of a stoner.
Yeah, I think he was.
He's kind of funny in a, like, doesn't think he's that funny, which is, I think, is always kind of a nice characteristic. So
that is
sort of
Michelangelo.
He's a bit sort of like he's super enthusiastic, and like he'll sort of not look before he leaps and things, which can be I think is quite a nice vehicle for him, like, so
yeah he's funny. Yeah, so they make up a good sort of team, you know, and then they sort of go and have their fun.
Is there any kind of endings you're not allowed to end on because it's a kids show? Like, what kind of, like,
God, no, actually. I think there's loads of little things that we wouldn't even think about that we've come across
compliance things. And I know, like, we should probably be really aware of compliance, but even things like if they're out, and obviously this makes sense in hindsight, but if they're out going for a cycle or on their skateboards, they have to all wear
safety
gear. If they're ever in a car, or they obviously have to wear safety gear, but then sometimes, because there's no cars in, it's Wagtail Woods is the name of where they live, so like the odd time they'd like, I don't know, they might be climbing up something, they always have to have their like hard hats on and stuff. And
yeah, but they also are animals, you know what I mean, so they still do things that animals do. Yeah. You know what I mean, so there's a bit of a thing there. But I would sort of think about it is like, yeah, we have to sort of keep all that sort of compliance things in our head, and you gradually, the more you do it, the more it just becomes second nature. But also, like, you're constantly sending these scripts off and these documents off as you're writing them to the broadcasters, and that's kind of, you know, that's part of their job as well.
Yeah, is to
So I think
you don't want to edit too much.
You can self-edit too much, and I think, you know, from the start. So
it's not like they're going to get mad with you.
No, they just say take it out. You know what I mean?
And that's their job.
Exactly. Well, yeah, they have more of a job than that. But I wouldn't.
Sorry.
No. I nearly said that. I stopped myself from saying that. No, I did say that. So yeah, they do. Yeah, so I didn't want to reduce them to that. But it's part of their job.
And how you wrote a sitcom called The Walshes. And how was that to write, because there was a few of you on the writing team there. What was the process like of writing with that?
I think with The Walshes, so we had originally, probably 8 years ago now, we had a series called Taste of Home, which was a little web series.
The Denny's, it was so good. It was like, oh my god. I was like, yeah, that's one of my top Irish things ever.
Oh,
like,
thanks.
Especially like the glory with the sausage.
Yeah. We actually had someone on set from either from Denny or from the advertising agency.
I don't think there's actually anyone from Denny.
And they had to check the
butcher.
We had some pigs out the back.
A sausage stylist.
No, but they did have someone who before we could shoot would check to make sure the sausages looked like golden and beautiful the way sausages should.
I think being fried in a shitload of butter.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. I don't think that's how you're meant to do it, but that's how they look nice.
It gives it the nicest sheen.
Yeah. Poor Rory, though. The odd time you kind of felt like, because he was the only one eating them, so the odd time, like, we'd go a couple of times and he'd be like, I can't eat any more sausages.
Would they be cold by the time Rory got them?
Lukewarm, I'd say. But yeah, so we did that, and then Graham Linhan saw it, and like, probably 3 years, 4 years later, we ended up making The Walshes. And so when we were writing that, it was, so there's five of us. That's myself and Shane and Philippa and Gaffo and Rory. And
You were part of Diet Worm. Sorry, I should have said that.
And we actually, the production company rented us this really, like, it was really nice of them, but it was awful. It was this little, like, writing room in this, it used to be an old BBC broadcast radio house or something.
Marylebone in London.
Yeah, in Marylebone in London. And it was so like grot and really...
I didn't mind it, I thought it was fine.
I don't know, there was just something a bit spooky and a bit weird. That's
pretty cool.
And, I mean,
it was a bit
so,
grotty, but it was a bit so grotty, cool, but I find that really romantic, so...
Yeah, maybe. Grot. I was just a bit like...
Like grot.
Yeah, grot is romantic. It was kind of punk. So we just kind of hauled ourselves up in there and...
So we had, I mean, like the characters were the same characters from The Taste of Home. So we were just, we made the decision, you know, through chatting to Graham and stuff like that, to like not have, because the original series was set in the 80s and early 90s. So we decided to do, I guess Moon Boy was out at the time, so we didn't want
to. It was just about to come out, so.
Try to do something similar to that. So yeah, we made it modern day, and then we would just, we sort of like broke stories as a, between ourselves and Graham, and then. Generally, we'd go off and bash out a script and then go back to Graham with it, and we'd talk about it, make some changes, and then he'd do a polish or whatever and stuff like that.
So I muddled
through. There was no set way of doing it. We just kind of muddled
through. Actually, the commission for the... So we did a pilot, and then we didn't hear anything for a while, and then the commission for the series came quite quickly. So it was only a three-part series, but we... So we were almost, when it came to the last episode, there was definitely a bit of being on set and getting handed a page like once or twice. Here's a new bit. We're not doing that anymore. And so
people who saw the last episode might be able to see how exactly this was the case. But there was about 5 pages missing. There was like, we were about 5 pages short when we went to shoot.
Yeah, I hate that when they were
filming. Really,
it's so terrifying.
Oh, it's so terrifying. And you find that out like 2 days before.
But it gets done.
I know.
It gets done in the end somehow.
It does. It does.
Everything gets done.
I know. It is funny though, like, because, I was thinking about
again,
that recently.
I sort of loved it. I sort of loved it, sort of writing on set.
Probably felt like you're in Saturday Night Live.
Exactly. That's exactly what it felt like.
And it was actually where we filmed was amazing. It was Teddington Studios, which I don't think exist anymore, but they were old like ITV type studios. And we just had this giant room with our house, like our Walsh's house built into it.
What?
Yeah, it was so cool. And like you could just walk around and I was like, oh, there's Kira's bedroom. And
it was so surreal.
Yeah, they're very surreal. So you were kind of, we'd be sitting there and say me and Philippa would be filming a scene and the lads would be off like writing, finishing up another scene with Graham. Or like it was amazing. It was such an amazing experience. Yeah. Like, and
how many weeks did you have on set?
Two and a half, I think. We shot for 2 days in Dublin and then, maybe three actually. 2 days in Dublin.
Yeah, about 3 weeks all in, I'd say.
Yeah.
How long was yours? Was it six?
It was 5 weeks, 6 episodes. Okay. And I was originally going to be like 4 weeks.
Oh, because they usually say an episode a week. So that's a lot to do, like in 5 weeks.
Oh, so much. I remember one day, so... It was like maybe the third last day and I got my, what did they call the little sheet you get?
Sides.
I got my sides and it was like me in every scene.
Yeah.
And it was on different days, different episodes. So I was in getting my hair done for a different scene and my nails done for a different scene, my makeup done. And I was just going all day. And eventually, like the last scene, and I know the scene, it's the scene where... Emma, who plays the character Michelle, she's in a car crying. And I had to, and our kind of set was like, we had a radio station based around the back of wherever the base was.
Mm-hmm.
And she had to drive and I had to give her a tenner. But I'd spent like 5 minutes just full on exhaust crying, where I was just like... The Idelle was putting on my makeup and I was crying
it off.
I was like, oh my god, I'm so I can't stop myself, I'm so sorry. I just wanted to get it done, but and we had one take. It was like after all the day, like we were just, and we got it done. But it's mad how you just push yourself and you get it done. But I'm literally just going, here's the tenor.
I'm going to have to go back and watch
but
that.
The thing is,
fifth episode or something.
I bet people don't. You're obviously going to be so much more aware. Because you have that
so
memory.
Aware.
And you know how you were feeling at that time. And I bet people will watch and go, oh, I didn't notice anything at all. Which that's what I find weird as well. Like the odd time I'd be like, oh God, I remember I had such a bad headache that day. And I felt terrible. But... You do it and you kind of, I don't know.
Gaffer had one, there was one line he had to do. He basically had to sort of exclaim, Google! And And Graham's a real stickler for getting things exactly the way he's got it in his head, exactly how he wants it. Or he certainly knows how he doesn't want it anyway, at the very least. So yeah, he must have done it about...
But I feel like it was like take 43, and we were all just sitting there going,
Google!
And Google?
And then at the end of the day, that's just some... That's like a nanosecond in the show. And
yeah.
But like, everyone has the experience of the half an hour it took to get it.
Oh, totally.
It's such an emotional thing, because we went to see your show 2 weeks ago, and you were talking about writing a sitcom and how that's all you ever wanted to do.
Yeah.
Because I was sitting there and I was like, I hope Alison can't see me nodding. Because I think that's how I remember, this is probably really cringy, but years ago I wrote down, like, you kind of go, like, in 5 years' time, I want this. And in 10 years' time, I want this. And one of them was, like, a show on BBC Two, I think, was what I'd said. I don't know why I picked BBC Two.
We did actually
get broadcast on BBC
Two.
But I remember just going, that's it. Like, once I get that, like, that's it. That'll be the golden ticket, or, you know. And it was so exciting to do. But it's funny how once you get something, you're then like, oh, what's next?
Next, absolutely.
Yeah, I remember hearing Sharon Horgan talk about that, and she... I think it might have been on Adam Buxton's
pod. I'm pouring water. Oh.
No, go for it. Do you want to pour yourself out?
I have some.
For it.
Sharon Horgan was talking about how you sort of get that thing that you think you've wanted for so long, and then you do it, and you're like, oh, that's great.
But now
I need the next thing.
Yeah, I definitely spent a lot of my time growing up imagining having a comedy show on BBC. And one thing I didn't imagine was that the next year I'd be spending the whole summer temping. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that was chasing me.
Oh yeah, because that happened. Yeah, we moved to London kind of for the Walshes, and then
it's just the reality of it.
It didn't get recommissioned, which is fine. And you do, but you do like what you were
London.
Saying as well. You're kind of like, yeah, it's shit, but like. You know, you have to just try and be as positive as you can. And then, like, I ended up temping and working as a receptionist in Nike. And I was like, oh, maybe I'll just work for Nike now. Maybe that's what I do now. Okay. And then, I don't know, you find something else to do. But it's funny how, things, you know.
The reality of it is totally different to what you build up in your head about it.
Oh, massively. And I think, like, I got massively depressed between the point of finishing the sitcom and when the sitcom was coming out, and then because it was just like, what now?
Yeah,
you know, it's so, because you tell yourself for years, this is it, and you work so hard to get to that point, and then once it's commissioned, you're like, done. I'd love to feel like the few days after it got commissioned.
Totally.
Do you know what I mean? Where you constantly. I'd love to feel.
And I always remember that feeling as well. Like, I feel like when we got our pilot, I think for some reason, I remember going out and like just going out for dinner and just getting pissed and being like, yes, everything's great. And it's like before you do the writing and the slog and everything.
Doesn't
but it is such a good feeling. It is such a good feeling.
Yeah.
But it's where you still remember that feeling and still will still drive you to want to sort of do it again.
Oh, totally. Or the feeling when you've kind of finished an episode, do you know?
Yeah.
And you're half happy with it.
Yeah.
And you're like, this is good.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. I can put that costume away.
Away!
Now.
Yeah. Now to the next bloody episode or whatever. It's like, I feel like you know how I feel so much more so than anybody else.
But I can't.
You've been in the same position as me.
Because I left your show just going, yeah, I know that feeling, and like it's so, and even when you're talking about feeling depressed afterwards, and
yeah,
I totally know that I think there was five of us as well, so we probably all dealt with it really kind of differently, and like I can be a bit of a like hide away and don't talk to anyone person, which is not a good way to be, but I guess it's just you just deal with things differently. But like it's I think I found it hard, and like what I found hard as well is that obviously because myself and Shane are married, and so it's that thing of you go home and like he knows exactly how I'm feeling, so which is great, but then it's also sometimes you might want someone who's not a part of it to be like, oh, don't worry, everything's going to be fine.
I know.
And you're totally in the same boat. Because
in the same boat. And you're living together.
And working together. And like it's...
So have you guys made any provisions for that?
Like
alone time.
Or anything like that. We didn't have the time to do it while we had the, because the thing got commissioned.
Yeah.
And we were kind of told, it's such a long shot. It's probably not going to get it. You're not going to get the funding this round or whatever. So we had done like 2 episodes and a treatment of the whole thing, and we kind of left it to the side. And then we got a phone call going, you got your funding. You need to get this done by this time. And then you're just like, there was no alone time. It was, we were kind of like, we weren't living together when we wrote the first series, and then we were living together when we were writing other stuff.
Mm.
And I haven't got the swing of getting alone time yet.
Yeah.
Mm. Or
I don't know if I think you're better. It'll be like, you know, we try and kind of go, okay, well, like 9 to 5 or 9 to 6 or whatever is work time. And then, you know, we'll be walking, like going out to the cinema, and I'll go, what do you think about if we do? I'm so bad for that, because I think you're much better at going, no, we'll talk about it tomorrow. And I'm like, but it's in my head now. What if it's not there tomorrow?
But I hate work though. So.
You don't. You don't.
I'm hoping she'll forget about it by tomorrow.
No, you don't. Like I think I just will come up with an idea, and I feel like I'll never have another idea again. So I better say it now, because there's no way.
That's what notebooks are for.
I know. Yeah. That's what I need, actually. I need to get a notebook.
No, but I'm like that too, because I'm a flesher outer then.
Yeah.
I'll say it and then I need someone to bounce off. Yeah. Then it's like a fully composed idea. Because if I write down a notebook, it will have a sentence like, jelly beans mirage.
Yeah.
It's like, what was I thinking?
It's like when you wake up having written something down in the middle of the night. It's what was that?
That was amazing. Or,
It's more, I'll know what it is, but it's terrible now as opposed to when I thought it was absolutely amazing last night.
And it's so sad because you're like, I wish I had that enthusiasm like at 2 o'clock in the morning that I have now. And you're like, I'm just left with remnants.
Yeah.
Remnants.
It's no good.
I've been watching YouTube essay videos lately of people talking about stuff, and someone was talking about Bear in the Big Blue House, and I watched a 15-minute essay on Bear in the Big Blue House. Now, Bear in the Big Blue House wasn't big to me, but I have 4 younger sisters, and the second oldest is 6 years younger than me. Then we got 10 years younger than me, and then 13 years younger than me. And I've actually got one sister who lives in England that's 19 years younger than me.
Wow.
So I went through whole generations of kids' TV. Like, I know all the references to Barney, because, like, I would have been a tiny bit too old for Barney, but my sister was really into it, so I watched it. And then you got Teletubbies.
Yeah.
What's the name? Oh, I'm so... It was made by the same company that made Teletubbies, and they're like
in the Night Garden.
In the Night Garden.
In the Night Garden, I've seen too, but there was one before that.
Oh.
I'm gonna actually Google.
Go on, Google.
Percy the Park Keeper was a big one. He's a cartoon.
Oh my God, I don't know.
And that's
these.
Like really niche, because my sister got it on a cheap video, and I don't think it was like massively successful.
Oh.
You know, like I don't think it was like thousands of toys of it or whatever.
Yeah.
I wonder, like, is that seen? I bet the reselling of toys is seen as a success for.
Yeah.
Kids TV
kind of. There's also there's a big company called Spin Master, and they would make a lot of the toys, and so they actually have started making TV shows.
No, they've cut out the that's wrong.
And so
sorry if you work for them.
I'm sorry.
That's my opinion. That's not your opinion.
And I'll tell you the show that they make. Paw Patrol, which is like everywhere.
Is that absolutely true now?
They do make Paw Patrol, and I'm not saying anything bad about it.
No,
you're wrong. Everyone's Googling everything. No,
that's
they do.
Everywhere.
I think they just went, like, yeah, we can do this. We can make TV. So they make Paw Patrol, and they make a show called Rusty Rivets, which is only a new show. But Paw Patrol is like, I mean, it's not even just like legitimate merch. It's like, you know, you go into like pound shops in the UK, and it's like, you know, there's so much stuff there, and.
You're right.
Yes.
Sorry, I was Googling
master.
Something.
I think you're right.
I was fact checking.
I think there is...
It's a big part of it. It's definitely a big part of it. There's no two ways about it.
For the more commercial broadcasters. So for something like CBeebies or CBBC, it's not as big a thing, because I think their remit is more to like...
No, they're public broadcaster, you know.
Exactly.
Public service broadcasters. Yeah. So they have different considerations.
Yeah, and they have to, I suppose, because of getting their
funding.
Thank
goodness.
Yeah. I love CBeebies.
So
do I. And I loved watching it when my sisters would watch it. What's the one with the old lady and the dog, Pippin? They go, look up, look down.
Oh, I don't know.
Come outside, it's called. It's amazing. She flies a plane. This is like live action.
Oh, nice.
Live action, older lady. She, Pippin, what will happen at the start is maybe there'll be a slight problem. And Pippin is there going barking.
Problem.
Yeah. And she's slight like, problem. I have no carrots for my pie. And then she'll go, Pippin, get in the plane. So her and Pippin, and they must use the same footage every time of just the dog and the her. Yeah, they must have like rented out a plane for 1 hour and used it for so many episodes. But they'd go to a factory and see how carrots are produced. Did you know what I mean?
I like
love
that.
Those kind of shows.
Like that's that. My favourite show because I learn stuff as well. I'm older and I'm like, I just have to watch this anyway. But then I'm like, oh, this
is how this works.
Yeah.
Yeah, but like how it's made, that's like an adult show. It's exactly the same thing. I don't think you ever grow out of that.
My
like,
stepfather was addicted to how it's made.
There's an updated...
It's such stepdad TV.
There's like an updated version of the Pippin show. It's called Do You Know? And it's brilliant. Like it's this woman and she'll like this, like, and it's very much like how stuff works. Like she'll go, do you know how your dishwasher works? I'm going to put a GoPro in the dishwasher. Yeah. You're going to see how it works.
No.
She'll be like, how do people make toilets? How does that work?
Let's use the GoPro.
Yeah.
I think they overuse the GoPro.
No.
The GoPro is Pippin.
Yeah, exactly.
Very
yeah.
updated.
But it's
not
I think
quite as charming.
There's, I think as well through when we were minding our niece Evie over in London, we would like, we obviously played with her lots, but we also put on CBeebies a lot, and it's such a gorgeous channel. Like the shows are.
Did you ever see Sarah and Duck?
No.
Oh,
it's like legitimately one of my favorite shows. Like not just a favorite kids show. Oh, it's one of my favorite
beautiful.
Shows.
It's so I don't gorgeous. Even. It's just it's this lovely 2D animation of a girl and her friend who's a duck. And
a seemingly independently wealthy little girl who lives on her own.
I thought you could say duck, an independently wealthy duck.
No.
He might be.
I think she looks after him. I think Sarah looks after herself.
But it's just like there's such beautiful music in it, and it's slightly surreal and kind of everything's a bit weird. It's gorgeous. It's,
I would definitely recommend checking it out. It's so good.
I'm totally gonna check that out.
Yeah.
Good. I think I've always loved cartoons, but I think even more so now. It's like, well, you need to watch them to see what other people are doing, but. I do like I watched cartoons until I was far too old to be watching I just love it.
Oh,
love
definitely.
It,
like. I was watching like not age appropriate stuff way past, because it's just like, you can't tell me what to do, society.
Yeah.
I'll watch this until I'm ready.
And it's quite, can be kind of soothing. It's like, because they always say in like the sort of execs in TV say that kids generally watch older. So they'll go on Netflix and a 5-year-old might watch something that's for 6 to 10-year-olds.
Mm.
But there's also the reverse where like I'll go over to my sister's house and my niece who's 10 will happily sit with her little brother who's 3 and watch Peppa Pig and love it. Like be really engaged in it as well. Like
apparently there's some pushback against Peppa Pig because of the dad character, because he's silly and not able to do stuff, and they're like, they're not respecting their
they
fathers.
Give him a hard time.
Did they give him a hard time too?
Yeah.
Daddy Pig.
Yeah.
I think Daddy Pig is not a nice name to give anyone.
I know. Daddy Pig and Mummy Pig. Yeah. He's a bit of a like scapegoat kind of dope, like a little bit.
But I think that's quite a prevalent thing in kids animation TV is like that is the dad character, you know what I mean? They don't want to make the mum like that.
Yeah.
Which is a pity because, you know,
women are capable
of being idiots.
I think there must have been a bit of a backlash because a lot of the times now you'll see like pitches for shows or ideas and it's like it's a working mum and a stay-at-home dad which is great, but you can still be a working mum and be a bit of crack, like because a lot of the time the mums can be quite
dry.
Yeah.
You definitely want to when you're like trying to come up with something new or whatever, you definitely want to avoid just the mum being, you know, the dad being wacky and sort of unreliable, and then the mum just kind of like
tutting
rolling her eyes and going, oh, dad, you know.
I feel like with Becca, the parents are, her mum and dad are in it. But I actually think that, like, not just us, everyone who wrote on it did a good job at not making one or the other the wacky, unfun one. Like, they're both fun characters.
Yeah.
I feel like when I compare it to the
Amy
shows,
does the voice of mums, of Becca's mum as well.
That's amazing.
It was really fun. I had to do an American accent as well, so I probably did. I don't even know if I did. I think I just did an American accent and that was how it went. But that's really fun. We've both done a couple of voices on a couple of animations, and I just like that. Like, I love writing for kids TV, but I love doing the voices so much. Like, it's Yeah, it's so much fun.
Is it like a day in the studio where you just be ridiculous or?
Yeah, and you like, so for the for doing Moms, which is Becca's mum's name, it was like 2 days, I think, 2 half days. And you just, you come out of it and you're just dripping in sweat because you're trying to gesticulate and be as like, act it out as much as you can. And like,
and you can't put a fan on in the studio.
You can't, yeah, as we know today.
As we know today. In this wonderful heat wave.
Yeah, you can't have a fan on in the studio. But yeah, no, it was really, I was delighted to get to play.
Yeah, you're very good at it. It's great.
Thanks.
Oh, maybe they'll like use your voice in some toy product.
Yeah, like I did think
that. Yeah. Yeah, I did think that, which was very weird. A very weird thought, but I did think that the other day. I was like, what if I'm like a Krusty doll?
That would be amazing.
Bada bing, bada boom.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
And it's only been out, 2 weeks now?
I think maybe a month longer? Now. A month, a yeah. Month. A few
sorry,
weeks.
Yeah.
That's okay.
And how does one know, like, how do you get feedback from parents or...
I'm not too sure how they do
I
it.
I mean,
actually.
There's ratings, I guess, okay. Which we're not privy to at the moment.
I wonder, like, do ratings really work for kids?
I know.
I presume that like, kids are put in front of a TV at a time.
I think that.
Yeah, I don't know, but I mean, like, how do they get ratings for anything? Like, we had a friend who had a Nielsen box.
Whoa.
And he had to enter in, like, how many people were in the room at the time.
What their age group was.
It seems like a really old-fashioned way of
That's
doing things.
Super old-fashioned.
Yeah.
But, like, that was, I mean...
That was up until the last couple of years.
Yeah, so they were still doing it up until the last couple of years. So
but it is funny with kids, because actually the thing I really liked, and this is going back to something you said in your show, was like how I was really glad that kids don't have Twitter because it was such a nice feeling to, because I know when the Walshes was on, like, I can't help myself. I just can't help myself. And I'm looking at hashtags
well,
and I'm looking
There was virtually no chat about the Walshes.
There was a little bit.
There was loads.
Oh, was there?
Yeah.
Sorry, I thought my brain. I'm too warm. I can't understand comedy.
When I went on RTE, particularly because whenever a new comedy goes on RTE,
everyone gets it. Everyone watches it for a second, and it's like this is shit.
It's so
annoying.
Like, oh, cool.
Thanks,
it's
guys.
It's so annoying.
Yeah.
It's only comedies that seem to get that.
I know.
Like there could be a turgid drama on, like. Absolutely badly made, badly written, badly executed drama, and there'd be nothing about it because it's seen as like
higher.
Oh, they were
art.
Trying something.
Yeah,
and it's like we were trying something. I feel like.
Well, I think everyone sort of thinks, a lot of people, like a higher percentage of people, think that they're funny.
Yeah,
and so they kind
it's
of
not
feel
true.
It's not true.
It's not true.
So
I'm watching
I guess
Love Island at the moment, and someone's describing someone else as funny, and I'm like, he didn't do a joke. He hasn't been funny.
He's not funny. He's not proven.
This is unproven.
Yeah.
We don't know. Yeah. So I guess I guess it's just in our nature to sort of feel like we're better equipped to sort of pass judgment on a comedy show than on a piece of high drama or something like that.
Yeah. I had a guy tweeted me, and he was going on about how Stuart Lee's comedy vehicle has had a budget of whatever and he could make that. And then he was kind of like saying, because I had my TV show out, that Stuart Lee's show was not being made. And I was like, we're in different countries.
There's so much wrong with what you're tweeting.
Really?
Like,
different countries. Like, also, I bet you have no idea how much Stuart Lee's comedy vehicle, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
you're like,
no idea.
Like, people. I remember actually, Rory Connolly, I hope you don't mind this, but like, I remember after the Walshes, someone, it was like in his butcher's or his greengrocer's or something, was like, oh, you're very good in the telly now. How much did you get for that? 50 grand, was it?
He
was like, 50 grand. That's how much I got an episode. Yeah. Like, I think people have this idea that you get paid incredibly well and like, I'm not, you. I mean, yeah.
For the hours that you put in, if you had to put it by an hourly wage, I'm saying for myself, it's like, you don't have to say anything at all. Nah, it's below minimum wage. And it's like, my family were convinced I was like a millionaire.
Yeah, you buy a house now.
My mum and my uncles and stuff were like, you're going to buy a house now. And I was like, I'm going to try and leave the country before I run out of money.
Yeah.
And go to London and have some, just enough for deposit.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
On a room.
Yeah.
And I'll go temping and I'll do that stuff.
Yeah.
And they're convinced because I'm on the telly.
I think that's it. There's such a preconceived notion that like, oh, well, you've made it now. And it's like, well, I haven't and I have no money.
And I find it so hard to like, like, I get offered jobs that are not fun comedy things to do, yeah, and not stuff that I would be particularly, and I'm like wrestling with myself, and yeah, I'm going, I literally go, this person's going to judge me, or I'm not going to be respected
by a specific circle. Person, do you think, or by a group? Yeah, like
by a person, and I don't think that person would judge me. I think I just respect that person too much, and yeah, I'm putting too high.
Yeah,
thing. I think that person wouldn't give a shit.
They yeah wouldn't even think about it.
No, yeah, but that's the thing that I think about.
Yeah,
and then I'm like, but you need to pay your rent.
Yeah, yeah.
So you need, and that just overrides everything.
Yeah, I think that's yeah okay though. I think.
Well, how are you at the moment on that? Are you?
I did like
still ongoing anxiety.
Oh yeah, yeah, definitely ongoing anxiety. Yeah. And it's like, and it's not the people that have offered me the thing, it's nice of them to do it because they think I'm able to do it, and it's nice of them to ask me, and they're not bad people or anything like that, but there's no definitely some jobs where I've done it, I'm like,
oh. Yeah.
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 Everyone's got that, haven't they? Everyone's got to sort of have to wrestle through that and sort of...
Yeah. Yeah, but you'd think with a TV series that you wouldn't have to.
No,
you
know? No,
I think that half me said to myself as well, once you get a TV series.
I still kind of feel like you do have loads of money. I kind of feel like you're lying. I still kind of feel like that. Even despite all this, I still.
I'm very financially silly. Yeah. like, yeah, yeah, I use too many taxis when I did have money. Or just Eats or whatever.
Yeah, yeah, delivery, Jesus, over in London, we were mad for the old deliveries.
Well, it's just because you've no time.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? If you're writing, like I had this assignment, like we were writing for like 4 hours, and then we'd be like, I have to physically stop writing because I'm so hungry, but I'm in an office, so I need yeah to get something sent. And it's just...
I can't rustle up a roast chicken and like... Do you yeah know, here? Yeah.
Yeah, or I forgot to shop this week.
Yeah.
So I'm like 3 days spending like €90 altogether
yeah
on shit food when I could have went shopping, but I didn't have the time. I should maybe ask you a silly question at the end.
Okay.
Just to... Because I've been definitely talking too much shop. I was like, how do you do
now? No, I'm
who
so,
are you appealing to?
I find that so interesting though. And honestly, I was so like... Yeah, I know that feeling. I feel that. So I just, yeah.
I was so curious about the whole aspect of writing. Anytime I talk to writers now, I don't give a shit. I'm just like, how do you, like I was trying to read a butcher yesterday.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
Who made Take My Wife. Now I've watched Take My Wife and like it was made by CISO. And I was like, how many weeks did you have to write that? She's like, 4. And I was like, yes. Like, and not even in a yes that it's really fucking good.
Yeah.
But I could see like it's so I really love it. But and you have this, I'd say, with the Walshes and everything. There's episodes that you love and that was your baby.
Mm.
And then there's that runt episode.
Yeah.
That I'm just like, don't watch that one first. Do you know what I mean?
Even if you never get around to that one, don't worry. It's yeah fine. Just yeah watch those others.
And then people yeah are grand. Like some people have got back to me and they're like, that's my favourite yeah episode. And I haven't told them what episode it, yeah, it yeah, you know, and I'm like, yeah, really?
Yeah.
And then actually, I'm like, I could point out several technical things. Yeah. I don't like, and it's my writing.
Yeah.
Do you know, because you don't
yeah
have enough time.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Before
yeah
I used to go, how do people make shit things? Because it can't be possible.
Now it's abundantly have clear.
It is. Yeah. It genuinely is. And I go, I respect that person, yeah, but that person did not have the time, the budget, or, you know, whatever the fuck
yeah
it is. And I'm really proud of Nowhere Fast, by the way. That does sound like when I go, I don't know how you made a shit thing until I made my thing. I'm so proud of it. Like, I really yeah am. But, like, yeah.
But there's just so much, you know, yeah, it's like there's so many things that go into it all. You know, it's never, and you never, no one I've ever met in this industry or anything in the closet is ever sort of like totally happy with.
No, but I think time helps. Like, I think I probably watched an episode of The Walshes about 6 months ago, and I was like, it was the first time I watched it, and I wasn't like remembering exactly how I felt, and it was really nice. I was like, oh yeah, actually, that's a good joke. Like, it's and it was so a lovely funny feeling to have that space of not having seen it for a couple of years, and then watch it and be like,
yeah.
And I think that I actually think I feel more proud of it maybe now than I did because. I don't know, I'm a little less emotionally invested in it because it's done and it's gone and that's okay and
there's no stakes and yeah, you know, it's not like
yeah,
you
it's
know
just a thing that we have now that it's yeah like cool, we did that and I like I'm sure you'll probably feel like that, you know, you'll fall so like not that you're not in love with it, but you'll just like in a couple of years time you'll be like, that was fucking amazing, like
yeah
I'm brilliant, like yeah I did this, like, and it's
yeah
it just takes a while I think to get there, but
yeah, you need sort of a bit of distance to sort of absolutely sort of look at it in any with any sort of semblance of Again, another word has popped out of my head.
Joy?
No. Well, we'll go with joy. It's not what it's I was, not exactly what I was looking for, but I'm not going to sit here and think of that word.
I'm going to put on the fan.
Yay! Yes.
Thank you so much, guys.
Thanks, Alison. Thank you.
Oh, no matter.
So that was Shane Langan and Amy Stevenson. They are fantastic. Thank you very much to Sarah Garvey, who produces the show. Thank you very much to William Conway, who does the artwork for the show. Bobby Ahern, who did the music for the show. And Paddy and Alan from Headstuff HQ, who very kindly helped me out with getting studio space and generally everything with the podcast as well. So thank you very much to them. Basically, because my life is in a bit of a flux at the moment, I have one last podcast in the bank left to release. So I'm going to try very hard to get some podcasts in the bank. So there'll be a lot less pressure on myself, because I love doing the podcast. It's my favourite thing to do, because it's the most, I get the most back for, you know, doing a podcast is not as stressful as writing a TV show. But I get a lot of enjoyment out of it. So I'm going to get some, I'm going to talk to some English people and try and get some podcasty people on. And when I'm back in Dublin, I'll interview people as well. Please be patient with me, and thank you very much. And if you've any recommendations for London of what to see, I'm going to go see the British Museum now. Maybe get a, we're going to go get a bus, a red bus. Ugh. And I've seen the Amy Winehouse statue. It's class. Other people have informed me that it's not good, but I like statues like Amy Winehouse or Joe Dolan. I like a statue that you can get up and hug, you know, and then marvel at how short the person was in real life. Yeah, I'll chat to you soon. Go to my tour. I'm doing a tour of Ireland in the new year. I'm going to Mullingar, Port Leash, Dundalk, Drogheda, but most of all I'm going to Vicar Street, and I had a great time with Vicar Street last year, and I'm excited about doing another show in Vicar Street. So please buy tickets, please, because I've moved to London and I don't feel like I've made a big mistake. Bye. You need to support my life decisions. Okay, bye.
This podcast is part of the Headstuff Podcast Network.